But right now I want to talk to Dr. John Duffy, our friend who checks in with us. And as we look toward the holidays, John, I know, you know, holidays always seem to be a time of sort of mixed emotions, right? They're a downer for some people, and then there's such an upper for others. I look forward to the holidays. I look forward to the decorating. I look forward to the decorations. But today, I got to tell you, I went into the hotel next door on my way into the studio just to grab a coffee. And it was so done up with the nutcrackers and the wreaths and the lights and the festivity stuff and everything was going on. I just thought, oh, my gosh, I'm so not ready for this yet. It just feels a little overwhelming this year. And then you just think of all the things it brings normally, the joyousness, the togetherness, and all the things that it won't necessarily be this year. But one of the things you do is you talk to teenagers and you talk with kids and how they're processing all of this. And I know in your practice, you're hearing a lot, right? There's a lot going on.
I am. And you're right, Anna. You know, the holidays every year amp things up. So if you come into it feeling kind of depressed and lonely, that tends to get heightened. If you come into it feeling upbeat, you know, that tends to get heightened as well. This year feels very, very different to me, much like you're describing. You know, like, I think a lot of people are trying to force the issue. Like, I'm going to try to enjoy the celebration for 2 solid months because I don't know when I'm going to get that again. With the kids I'm seeing 2 kind of distinct groupings. One is this group of kids that is holding on to a feeling of hopelessness to some extent, that any of this is going to get any better through the holidays, even through the next year and next year's holidays. They're thinking like, you know what? What I know is normal is never going to return. And I think the parenting challenge there is to instill some degree of hope, move the goalposts of normalcy down the road a little bit, but, you know, try to keep hope alive. And then there's this group of kids that's real pragmatic about this whole situation, recognizes this is a moment in time, but the holidays are going to be different this year, but they're resigned to it, and they feel pretty comfortable that by next year things are going to be pretty normal, and they seem to be a little better regulated than some of the other kids.
It's a great observation. I just feel like there's one after another disappointment being delivered their way. And you know, we talk about sports and we talk about the activities and seeing their friends and all that. You know, look, it's not as important as somebody, you know, getting critically ill or dying. And we know we're weighing these sort of choices, but in their world, disappointment after disappointment after disappointment, it just adds up, right? And you start seeing them internalize it.
It takes an enormous toll over this much time. And I've mentioned here before that I've done this job for 25 years in practice with teenagers, and I've not seen them so burdened by the depression, anxiety, losses, you know, disappointments over the course of a period of time. And I've never seen anything like this year, because normally what we're trying to do in practice is find like the irrational elements of thinking. And not much of what kids are thinking about is altogether irrational. Typically what they're worried about, they can find some compass of actual reason in there. So it gets real tricky to find the hope in what is a rational set of thoughts. It's very tricky. And for a parent, it's really threading a very fine needle of creating, like, especially in the holiday season, kind of more a pass-fail circumstance than this is going to be the best Christmas ever kind of circumstance.
Yeah, I hear you on that. I wonder, is it better to sort of say, you know, well, so my daughter's school got shut down became all remote just last week from the hybrid. And I think she really enjoyed the hybrid and the interaction with the teacher. And the same week, you know, there was, we were supposed to go to the museum, they shut down too. And I just wonder, how do you sort of temper that? Like, is it better to just sort of set the expectations low and sort of say, hey, we may be going to a museum. You may not have school in person anymore. You may not, preparing for all these future disappointments, I just don't know what's better, or just try to be realistic, I guess.
Well, I'm so reticent to sign on to that because, you know, like it kind of lowers this bar and you picture like on the back end, how do I bring the expectations back up? But I do think you want to be in the good enough category. You know, this is going to be good enough and we're going to find some fun and some joy in here. I don't know if you had a chance to look at this. There was an article in the New York Times yesterday that kind of mirrors what I'm trying to do in practice. And instead of just shifting expectations down, mm-hmm. this is about taking the script or ritual or traditions that you typically have and improvising. So instead of just doing exactly what you've done before and hoping for the same result, improvising a little bit and allowing for different moments to be joyful and memorable. So you can create new traditions where you tell family stories around the fire pit, or you connect via FaceTime, or you watch a different movie this year, you play a different game this year. Create something different that creates a different level of, a different strata, I suppose, of fun, so that your kids can remember and enjoy this time and recognize, like, oh yeah, we can go through a really difficult time and still be resilient to it and still enjoy parts of it. Like, it's not binary. It's not like it's all good or it's all bad. There's shades of gray in here that we can work with it.
Yeah, I like that, to have us do something different this year. I mean, everything has been different. We've kind of gone on the treasure hunt thing. We've never done those before. This year, we're doing them all the time because they can be outdoors and they're fun. It seems to be something that's become a thing for a lot of kids this year.
Oh, a really great thing. The letterboxing and geocaching and treasure hunts, anything that you can do outside. You know, I notice a lot of my clients have bought fire pits and they, you know, spend a lot of time outside in the yard. You know, a lot of families have gotten pets, gotten dogs that they can take for walks. So people are improvising pretty well, but there's still this foreboding kind of like, we've got this next shutdown coming up, we think, but we're not sure exactly what that looks like. It probably looks different than March and April, but how different? And, you know, you want to anchor your kids in some predictability around the holidays too. So if you're typically decorating right around now, definitely do that and hold on to the bits of tradition that you can, right? You know, so while improvising is important, if you're used to decorating a certain time of year, if you're used to watching a certain show, if you're used to having a certain meal, certainly don't abandon all tradition or your child will feel unmoored and unanchored at really unpredictable times. And I think that makes things a little more difficult for them.
Yeah, I want to talk to you a little bit, Dr. John, about the isolation, because I am noticing just in the, especially the teen and preteen kids that are in my family and within the French My Friend network and stuff, like, they are not handling this so well. And one part about it that is very surprising to me is that I know back pre-pandemic, they used to be on their devices nonstop, and that seemed to be where their head was always, you know, down on their device, even when there are other friends around. But now, I'm telling you, that there's something about that human, you know, the interaction, that even the kids who are addicted to their phones, they're feeling it. They really are, and I feel for them.
Absolutely, yeah. Kids feel, on the whole, disconnected. You're exactly right, Anna, that if there is one kind of symptom that sums up the year, it is this lack of connection. And you realize how very, very important that is. And connecting via FaceTime, I shudder to think what this would be like without technology. I think there is a little bit of good that does for the psyche. But that face-to-face interaction, you know, to be able to hug a friend, to be able to look somebody directly in the eye, this is something that kids miss desperately, and they're also falling out of the practice of doing it. So some kids are becoming anxious socially in a way that they weren't before because they just don't have the practice effect over the course of the year that they've had in the past.
So how do you correct that? I mean, what can you possibly do that? Can you do that through a Zoom call? It doesn't feel the same to me.
It's definitely different, and I've tried, and you cannot. So it's a great question. The best way to do it is to create, for lack of a better word, because I work with a lot of teenagers, but this is effectively the right word, to create these kind of brief play dates. It's kind of like gradually exposing them to the stimulus they're most anxious about, right? Brief play dates, like, let's get together and have a cup of coffee around the fire pit and be 6 feet apart, or, you know, or take a walk together or ride bikes together and do it briefly. Make sure that, you know, as parents, you say, like, you got to be home by X time so the kids can kind of develop a practice effect and get used to being with their friends again and connecting with them the way they used to. But you got to do it in small chunks, because if you send a 15-year-old out for the night, they are going to oftentimes become anxious and might abandon ship and become more anxious the next time they go out. And that's what we're really trying to avoid. We're banking on them getting used to this so they keep going out and connecting with their friends.
Mm-hmm. And just figure out a way to do it. It is interesting because I'm a social person. I feel like I don't miss all the big events as much, especially because I know it's temporary. I don't miss all the big festivals and all the big get-togethers and stuff like that. I'm trying to be introspective and as positive as possible during all this. But I know that I try to imagine now the 15-year-old self, you know, or my 20-year-old self, and how isolating that must feel, right? I mean, it's hard enough for adults that they look at this differently.
We have this luxury, you're right, of looking back on decades of life, right? And we know that there isn't this absolute urgency that something great has to happen now, this week, this weekend, this holiday season. We know that, okay, we have the scope and we can see that, you know, things are normalizing, things feel different than they did back in April, and things will certainly feel different this coming April. So we have this scope that we can look back on. Kids do not have the luxury of that. And so if they see on Snapchat or Instagram that their friends are getting together, this creates this panic, this urgency, this fear of missing out that is very real for them because they don't have all this experience that tells them, oh, no, it's no big deal. You'll make the next thing. This feels like I will not be part of the group. And it does feel upsetting and urgent. And so I always encourage parents, like, don't minimize that feeling. Like, even if you're erring on the side of being very conservative about the precautions, recognize and acknowledge that this is really hard for your kids. Mm-hmm. You know, like, they need to know at least that you know that. And you need to provide them hope that, you know, this does change in the future.
Yeah, I like that. 630, this is a learning opportunity and a character builder. This generation could become our next great generation. Have faith in kids. They are resilient. I've been saying all along, Dr. John, they're either going to be the most resilient or the most messed up kids ever. I mean, this is so much for them to go through. My God.
Yes, I suspect there's going to be a little bit of both, but I do agree that there is an awful lot of resilience being built, and it's okay to point that out to them. They won't love it, right? Because, you know, they don't want to build resilience right now. They want to be with people and have fun. But again, we are looking for things to be good enough. And if kids recognize I can experience some discomfort, go through some degree of spontaneity with my family, and things are still going to be okay, you know, that is a huge, huge learning experience. And I completely agree that, you know, like in terms of school learning, like, you know, I think most parents and kids would argue, even teachers would say, this has definitely been a choppy year and your kid might not have done their best learning in 2020, but they have learned that they are competent and they are resilient to difficult times. And that's no small thing. Like, to my thinking, those are the goals of parenting. You know, like the rest of the stuff they can pick up on, but to know that you're competent and resilient, that's a big deal.
I will say, I've been hugely impressed because e-learning, let's face it, it isn't perfect. There are challenges for everyone involved. And one of the things that my daughter's really done at age 8 is she manages her time by herself now. Like, she goes into her little room, and I'm at work, my husband's working, and so she, at the age of 8, she's got her MS Teams, and she's got her Zoom calls, and she's got homework that she has to finish before she interacts with the teacher. And I don't know how she keeps track of all this stuff. I mean, it's amazing to see them do that. That's a positive that I look at.
Such a big positive. I'm so glad you pointed that out. And even a child as young as 8, your daughter, right? You know, kids are very capable, but this is a muscle they haven't acted very often because, you know, as parents, we're used to kind of micromanaging and helicoptering and all this stuff. Now, a lot of the things our kids are doing, we don't even understand. Like, we don't understand how to get on the Zoom calls sometimes and, you know, what the work is that they're doing and what kind of interfaces they're using. And so kids know this stuff better than we do. And so young kids are navigating their worlds really, really beautifully. And it's unprecedented. They've never done this before. They're the first to do it. It's really quite impressive what the education system has been able to do. And I know people give school districts a very, very hard time, but it's really impressive what's happened over the course of the year. But also what the kids are doing in response is pretty pretty impressive given the very, very short runway they've had to get started here.
And the stuff they've learned. I mean, they've been brought into the century. It's like incredible. I mean, I was on a Zoom call yesterday catching up with some friends, and my daughter's like, you know, you don't have to use that background. You can change it. You can totally change it. I'm like, oh, okay, okay. I actually don't know how, so why don't you show me? It was a great moment. Hey, Dr. John, can you stick around for just a second here? I have to break here, but we'll come back with Dr. Absolutely. John. Dr. John Duffy, clinical psychologist. He is the author of Parenting the New Teen in the Age of Anxiety. And we'll talk to Dr. John on the other side of this. So, back here, Anna DeVlantis, 252. We're talking to Dr. John Duffy. Just briefly, though, the governor's speaking. And so far, we've just been monitoring what he's saying. And he's just talking right now, and someone from the IDES, Illinois Department of Employment Services, is speaking. They're talking about how a lot of people are coming in again seeking unemployment in the state, and that without stimulus, people are, of course, struggling. So he's urging people to call your congresspeople, get them to pass some stimulus. That's what's happening. We'll continue to monitor that. Dr. John, you know, last time we talked, you said something really powerful, and I have totally taken your advice on this, where you just sort of, you kind of do, I don't know, well-being checks, for lack of a better way to say it, just on folks in your life, you know, maybe you haven't talked to in a while, maybe they're living alone, maybe they're going through something, I don't know, and you just say, how are you? And then you follow up to say, no, really, how are you? And it just opens up really great conversations and, you know, a way to help. It's really, it's a powerful thing and a very simple thing.
I'm so glad you're doing it. And, I will add to that. First of all, kudos to you for taking me up on that, Anna. And, I think it's really important to note that we sometimes make assumptions that friends of ours or family members who are maybe have some family that live with them are doing just fine, or who still have a job are doing just fine. But this is a very weird time and a very unusual year, and I don't know many people who are doing just fine. So I think it's worth checking in on just about anybody you care about in the next month or so and really, really asking them how they're doing and letting them air that out, because we all need that during this time. If we are not talking about how we're doing and how we're managing, this is probably manifesting all over our lives in ways that we're even unconscious of. And better to bring it to the surface and talk it through and deal with it and cry it out if need be, so that we can kind of move on and maybe enjoy some of our time and create a model for our kids in terms of emotional self-regulation, which is no small thing.
No, it is not. 312, I teach children's theater in garages and backyards. Kids and instructors all wear masks, social distance. They come for an hour a week with their pod of friends, six kids, and at the end of 10 weeks, they perform for their families. It's fantastic. Many extracurricular programs can run like this. It brings a bit of normalcy to their lives. It's kind of what you were talking about earlier.
I love everything about that. And, you know, we were talking about connection, right? And here's all these connections happening, right? The actors connecting with one another and the crew connecting with each other and the families being part of that connection. There is no downside. And I think the more creative, and that is beautifully creative. I love it. The more creative we are, and using the outdoors is going to be a big part of this, I think, even over the course of the winter, unless it's like dangerously cold.
Right.
The more creative we are in creating these connections, especially face-to-face connections, the better off we are going to be in terms of emotional wellness down the road. And I'm always thinking, what's it going to be like, you know, 6 months from now? And I'm always looking to mitigate emotional difficulties, and that is a great way to do it right now.
And kids love being outdoors, right? They do. It's like they're the ones who call them in from outside. It's raining. Come on inside. They don't care. It's snowing. Great. We want to be outside. So it's just as long as you bundle them up, and yeah, you do it. Hey, Dr. John, we don't have much time here left, but this is something that's come up a lot. And I think it's a very relevant to right now conversation many people are having. There's this sort of generational divide between kids and their parents, especially with elderly parents, and they're talking about the holidays and whether or not they'll spend them together. And there are concerns going both ways, and there's some conflict involved here. That is a tough thing to navigate, and I just wonder if you have any advice for those conversations.
Yes. The first piece of advice I have is do not do this spontaneously. Really come up with a family plan ahead of time and keep safety in mind and connection in mind. So those are the two goals. And whatever you need to do to achieve those two goals simultaneously, not easy. But for example, my mother's 90, she lives alone. And over the course of the Thanksgiving day, we can't get together and have a meal with her, but she's got a big enough place where I can go and visit her in social distance, and my brother can do the same, and some other family members can FaceTime her and create an experience for her that is both safe and connected. And the more creative I think we can be about things like that, and making sure that nobody feels totally isolated and alone, the better. But plan this thing out. Otherwise, what tends to happen, I find, is we tend to regress toward, let's just all get together. And that, we can all see, could potentially be regrettable in a fairly grave way.
Hey, we're out of time, but do you have any more, I know you do a lot of talks and some things that people can participate in. Anything coming up we should know about, Dr. John?
I do, and I wish I could tell you exactly dates and times, but if you look at my website, my website is drjohnduffy.com. Uh-huh. Those will be listed there.
Say that again. Your website is?
It's just drjohnduffy.com.
Dr. John Duffy. Well, thank you, Dr. John Duffy. We always love hearing from you. Love your advice, too.
Thank you, Anna.
Talk to you soon. That's Dr. John Duffy.